there's some turbulence up ahead. It's a good thing you found us. We are the Prepper Broadcasting Network. Your path, act as stability.
The American people are entitled to transparency.
We can't sustain a system that bleeds billions of taxpayer dollars on programs that have outlived their usefulness or exist solely because of the power of politicians, lobbyists, or interest groups.
They're entitled to be able to figure out where their dollars are going, and they're entitled to accountability.
We are going to go through our federal budget, as I promised during the campaign, page by page, line by line, eliminating those programs we don't need and insisting that those that we do need operate in a sensible, cost-effective way. No amount of waste is acceptable, not when it's your money.
And welcome, everybody, to the Rising Republic. I'm L. Douglas Hogan.
And I'm Ryan Buford. Glad to have you here today, everyone.
Well, I hope everybody had a great Easter. How was things on your end, Ryan? Did you get to hide any of those chicken eggs around the yard?
No, I know better than to do that. Usually the dogs will find them before the kids do, and then I'm in a world of trouble. But it was good. It was good. I got a lot of stuff done. I'm still kind of going gangbusters, getting stuff done in the yard and getting ready for the growing season here. So I've been going like crazy personally.
How's your new puppy going?
He's doing great. We're kind of working with him. He's a pit bull mastiff mix. So that's a lot of dog, and they have a tendency to have a pretty powerful bite. So I got to be really careful on training him to work with the mouthiness, so to speak. But luckily I got some decent neighbors helping me out. And, you know, like they say, good fences make good neighbors, but it's kind of hard to beat neighbors that don't need fences, you know?
Man, so. I wish I had the same thing going on here. I don't know if I've ever told you, but I got some neighbors over here. There's been property disputes and everything else in the past, and it's really been problematic. Things have calmed down a lot, but for a while, like, they were enlarging their property by moving and encroaching a fence line onto my property. I should say our property, me and my wife's, encroaching and actually having the testicular fortitude enough to put signs on our side telling us to keep off while nice. The horses and everything else. Yeah, they would ride it on. They would come over onto our pond and have the balls to tell me that our pond is a liability, right? So they're fishing in it. We have to run them off. They're driving their side-by-sides and four-wheelers and everything else on it. They're bringing their horses over to graze on our grass. I mean, that's the kind of thing back in the day, you know, would have got you shot.
Oh, yeah. That's where barns get burned down.
Yeah. But, no, I mean, you know, they say, you know, we've come a long way, you're progressively wise, right? And but I wonder back in the day if something like that would have, if they would have seen, like, if they were alive today and they could see or hear stories on how, like, that's just tolerated now. Just have words. Yeah. And so I had to pay $2,000-$3,000, whatever it was, maybe as much as $5,000. I can't really remember to have the surveyors come out.
Did you?
Put some holes, some lampposts in the ground and survey things out and give me plats and everything else to prove this to this idiot that this is in fact my land. And so he had to take everything up and push it back. But imagine those settlers back then, you know, they would have shot people and they're like, what? You didn't shoot him in the face?
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing to me how much people can be that way and just kind of assume that stuff is theirs and trample over other people's boundaries. And, you know, it's kind of weird to think about that too. Here we're, you know, trying to guard your castle, so to speak. Right. And set boundaries and be able to have your space and my space and like that. But it seems like people are just like, whatever, there's no fences. So I'm going to run my four wheeler and have my dogs over and do this and do that. And, you know, it's like I said, here in the West, that shit didn't fly.
No.
I mean, you start trampling on water rights, next thing you know, you got a bullet in the back of the head and you're going to the ranch, so to speak.
Yeah. Because I like to watch like the Yellowstone spinoffs. Yellowstone and the Yellowstone spinoffs and those things, they call it the train station. you know, like it's,
train station. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. They're like, hey, take them to the train station. Well, the visitor might not know what the train station is, but the train station is this place in this county. And there's like the county has like a population zero. Population zero means there's no aldermen, right? There's no chairpersons. There's no mayors, no governors, no police. There's no nothing. And in this area, there's a huge cliff. And I guess this location is real. I don't know that it's used this way. Probably not. It's probably just fictitious writing. Really good stuff, though. But they would drive them out to what they call the train station. So these people get in the truck and they think they're going to the train station, like they're just being escorted off the Dutton Ranch. But in fact, they're being ended. And so they take out to this place. They put them off the edge of this cliff. Boom, and then let their bodies roll on down because nobody goes out there. Nobody will find them.
There's a book I have, and if anybody's interested in reading this kind of stuff, there's a book called An Ornery Bunch, O-R-N-R-E-Y, I think, or Ornery Bunch. And basically, it's a collection of stories from Montana from the turn of the century, like actual cowboys that were doing cowboy stuff. And one of the ones that I just kind of flipped through, they're like 5-minute reads each one. But basically, they went around, they talked to these old cowboys and just Montana ranch hands and stuff to find out, you know, just ask, tell them one good story of them growing up. One of them was a story about when people got too drunk, and what they would do is they would, if someone got out of hand and got too wily, instead of waiting for the law to come and show up, what they do is they basically, you know, wait till they pass out, and then wherever they were, they would go find them, bring them back to the bar, and then strap them to the pool table with their belts. So they basically have them tied down, and then everyone in the bar would take a turn, basically taking their belt off and going to town on this guy because he got a little bit out of hand. And you learn real quick when you see and or experience something like that, that you learn to control your liquor and you learn to control your tongue pretty quick.
Yes.
And if somebody's willing to do something like that in a community where there is no alternative or there's no alternative law or, you know, sheriff or whatever, you learn to act right real fast.
So. Yeah. I bet everybody that's probably listening to this has heard or is either heard or seen the movie Full Metal Jacket.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You know, the scene. Yeah. Where they give that treatment to old, Gomer Pyle. You know, that's what they call him, the character's name. He's playing Gomer Pyle, or that's his nickname anyway. His character portrayed as a nickname being Gomer Pyle. And they just started lynching him with us. They had put bottles of soap down inside their sock, and they're just all taking their turn waylaying. Yep. You know, and that was the kind of justice that you did back then, you know. And I was fortunate enough that when I was in the military, I didn't have to deal with any of that. You know, everybody kind of stuck to their guns. But everybody in the military, in boot camp specifically, screws up at least once. And everybody, there's this thing called group punishment. And group punishment, the reason why I think it's so effective is because you learn real quick that the actions of one affect the many. And that's how it is in society. You know, everything that we do has a recourse, either positive or negative. It doesn't matter what decision you're making, what action you're taking. Whatever you do has a recourse, whether it's positive or negative.
Absolutely. In Japan, they have a saying, the nail that stands out gets pounded down.
See, the Japanese have so many wise sayings and stuff. That's why I've always admired their culture. I mean, they've been around long before the United States was ever even a country, but they've got it nailed down. China's communist now, but you know, back before they were like they are now, they had a lot of wisdom too in their writing in their early culture.
Oh yeah. So what are we into today? Speaking of wisdom and writing and culture.
Before we get into what I want to talk about today, I just want to throw some accolades out because I received an email and I want to actually just send it to you just prior to the show.
Oh yeah, I just saw that.
It says, "Hi, L. Douglas Hogan. I hope you're doing well. My name is Vineet. I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong, Vineet. And I'm the founder of millionpodcasts.com. I'm excited to share that your podcast, The Rising Republic, has been recognized as one of the top USA podcasts on the web by our panel." Now, and it goes on to give me a list, you know, of the top 100. And then I scrolled, you know, through it. I'm like, where am I at? Where am I at? Where am I at? Where am I at? You know, we're towards the bottom, but it doesn't matter to me. You know, there's, I've done the research. There's like 1.5 million podcasts in the United States. These guys right here, millionpodcast.com, have over a million podcasts in their inventory. Okay.
Nice.
So to be, yeah, yes, to be, cool. Yeah, it is. And cause what is, even if we were number 100, what is that, you know, the percentage wise out of 1 million? You know, that's a fascinating, very, it's like a tenth of a percent, right? It's super small. This list is the most comprehensive ranking of USA podcasts online, and we're honored to feature yours among the best. We greatly appreciate a brief mention on the top at the top 100 USA podcast list in any of your upcoming podcasts. So I'm doing that for you right now, Vineet. Thank you for, yeah, for adding our podcast. Yes, absolutely. That's really, really cool. And basically, I want to go a little bit further and talk about Million Podcasts because I looked you up, and I just want to talk a little bit. It says, welcome to, I just went to millionpodcast.com. Your mission, I'm just going to read your mission here at Million Podcasts. Our mission is to provide an efficient and effective solution for your podcast outreach. We understand the challenges of identifying the perfect podcast in your niche and making meaningful connections. That's why we've created a comprehensive database that offers everything you need in one place. And then one more paragraph here. What we offer, we provide access to an extensive database of podcasts from various industries and niches, allowing you to target your outreach campaign precisely. Our advanced search filters enable you to find the most relevant podcasts that align with your campaign goals. We ensure that the contact information you receive is accurate and up to date. So basically, if any of you out there are listening to this podcast right now, and you're perhaps over on millionpodcast.com, and you happen to find that we are the things we talk about on the show and our values, if they align with yours and you want to call into us and maybe promote yourself or your product, reach out to us. And you can, this is how she reached out to me. You know, she literally just reached out to me and Ryan at patriotrising1773@gmail.com. So do that, you know, reach out to us at patriotrising1773@gmail.com to me and Ryan. Let us know about yourself and we'll look into you. We'll see if you got something to share, some product or something. You know, maybe you're a public speaker. Maybe you just want to get on a show and talk to us. We could always have a third person on, right, Ryan?
Oh yeah, absolutely. More the merrier.
Absolutely. So for those of you that don't know, we actually did record before, prior to Easter. We didn't record anything Easter weekend, but we recorded a show the week prior to Easter weekend. I got new equipment. Ryan's, it was transitioning from Skype, because we always recorded on Skype, to Teams. And we just had a whole plethora of audio issues that was going on. To make a long story short, we talked about some things and the audio was terrible because I couldn't hear him and he couldn't hear my audio, something along those lines. And so it was just kind of bad. And I did record the whole thing, but I couldn't put it up. I couldn't do that to you guys. Nothing but quality coming from here. So hope you understand. That being said, we're going to kind of retouch on those topics that we talked about the last time we recorded and didn't get that out there. Here's what's going on. I just want to let everybody know up front that we had that there is, you can call it an Islamic foothold in Texas right now, over by Josephine, Texas, a little town called Plano, a little area called Plano. There is what's being built called an Epic City. Okay. Right now it's just a community, but they're calling it Epic City. And what that stands for is East Plano Islamic Center. And the East Plano Islamic Center is a community of nothing but Islamists. And they are currently practicing Sharia law. Now, this has become a big issue because, from what I'm understanding from my research, is they've been able to grow this community. They're still in the process of building it. There's people living there. What I'm understanding, there's close to 900 homes there that's been built. They have a worship center, and nobody's allowed in here. Now, it's Sharia law, so nobody's allowed in here but Islamists who believe it the way that they believe. Okay, this is the problem that we're facing right now in America. And what's crazy to me, and me and Ryan talked about this 2 weeks ago when we recorded this, is that this was allowed to get as far as it was, or as far as it did, under Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, under his nose. how they're building things with no building permits. Like, how did this even happen? I'm so confused by this. Here is a brief mention, and this is the ABC 8 out of Texas. Listen to this.
And a Muslim-centric neighborhood is in the works now at the center of a state investigation. Governor Abbott went as far as to say he'll promise it'll never be built. Attorney General Ken Paxton launched an investigation against the East Plano Islamic Center, that's also known as EPIC. EPIC wants to develop land in Josephine, about 25 miles east of Plano. And Kevin Reese has a look now at what both sides are saying.
402 acres of beautiful scenery. Welcome to the future of living. Welcome to EPIC City.
In promotional videos, Epic City is a collection of single and multifamily homes and commercial developments surrounding a mosque and school.
Epic City is more than just a neighborhood. It's a way of life.
But last month online, Governor Abbott raised the rumor of Sharia law playing a part. State Rep. Jeff Leach wrote a letter asking the Attorney General to investigate. And Epic responded to the governor online saying, "Our vision is to build a diverse, safe, and inclusive community, and will follow all local, state, and federal laws." And the resident scholar at Epic acknowledged the noise.
You're probably aware that on social media, there's a lot of negative campaigns against our particular masjid, Epic, because of our project, Epic City, right? And a lot of the far right are riling up hatred.
Now this week, Abbott and Paxton announced a dozen state agencies are investigating the proposed development, alleging serious legal issues. The Texas Funeral Commission sent a cease and desist letter alleging illegal funeral services at the East Plano Islamic Center. And the governor on X writing, "This is the tip of the iceberg. The proposed community will never see the light of day." Representatives for Epic City could not be reached for comment on Thursday, but last month invited the governor to see the site and maybe some barbecue to learn more about the project. In Plano, I'm Kevin Reese.
What's your thoughts, Ryan?
Man, that's scary. You know, especially if you're, you know, I don't want to jump the gun, but, you know, they're committing to following the law and doing this kind of other stuff. But like you mentioned before, you know, we're talking Sharia law. And is an Islamic state that's basically been able to creep in and check out, you know, land and be able to do this kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden now they're dropping bodies in the ground without the legal requirement of, you know, following the laws that they're supposed to do on something so simple, you know? It's kind of like, you know, project creep or, you know, the slow boil or whatever you want to call it. But this is definitely the start of something far larger than just, oh, we're building a community.
Right. And just a rhetorical question for you. You go ahead and answer this. This is for the listeners. I'm sure they know it too. Like I said, this is rhetorical. What's the law of the land?
The Constitution. You know, United States Constitution, of course. But you know that that's not going to be recognized.
No, I mean, it can't be.
And that's where it gets scary, when it's, because at this point it borders on occult mentality, and you start having communities that build around a religious belief system, and they throw up walls and think that they can be independent of the national law of the land because they find that their laws are morally supreme within the land of the United States, and that becomes a major problem. It reminds me of a previous incident that happened back in the early 80s with the Rajneesh. I think it's kind of like a Indian cult in Oregon that happened over here between 1980 and 1988, I want to say. They basically bought a bunch of land and then converted into a community and then made this gigantic religious thing. And then they wound up doing all kinds of weird, crazy stuff. And there were some messed up things happening, and they wound up poisoning the community at a, like a buffet kind of thing, you know, where you have like food stuff. And they put a bunch of weird poison inside the food that people were eating. And they traced it back to this cult basically. And the reason they did it was because they weren't getting the permitting or something that they needed. You know, they wanted it to be able to take over. And it was getting out of hand. I sent a link to you on that in the chat, but it's something that is definitely like it creeps in. I mean, this kind of stuff happens slowly, and then the next thing you know, you have tents going up and Quonset huts and, you know, whatever version of temporary housing you can think of under the guise of Indian or Hindu or Islamic or whatever it might be. And the next thing you know, you have not just a small community, it's thousands or tens of thousands of people. And if you do this near a small town, which it does sound like they're doing, that small town simply doesn't have the resources to fight it. And then the next thing you know, you have somebody in that religious community taking over city council and the mayor's office and the police station. And then all of a sudden that creep starts to move in the direction of anywhere it can. It's dangerous. I mean, I don't know how else to say it, but it's dangerous.
Right. Yeah. I don't want anybody to think, you know, like, cause I can see as you was telling me that story, like my mind began, I'm trying to think abstract. The United States itself has gone through times where, you know, for example, we'll say during the civil rights movement in Martin Luther King days, you know, when blacks were just starting to run for public offices and they were, you know, no longer made to sit in the back of the bus and all this other kind of thing, you know. There were people out there that was worried about blacks running for public office and taking over. And this isn't like that. This isn't about civil rights. Okay. Because this is about the United States Constitution being the law of the land, about a religious group who believes that, if you're gay, you should be killed, that women should be beaten and wives should be beaten and scourged, and placed into submission. Right. So, beheaded. You know, if you don't believe that they believe that when you steal that your hands get cut off, and they have all these different kinds of burial rites and everything else, and the United States Constitution is law of the land. So what we have here then is a group that's growing and manifesting itself within our own boundaries, saying that we will not honor or respect your Constitution. That Sharia is our law. And this is the way that we believe. If you come into this area, and they're basically invading and taking this land and saying, this is how we are. And so that's not good at all. And for everybody who's still pondering, I have something. I think I read it last week. If I didn't read it last week, I probably had it on a show that I ran solo not long ago. Ryan, you'll respect this because, and I don't know who the author of this is. I just want to read this because a question went out to a man that was a Muslim, and he was asked, can Muslims be good Americans? And he gave 10 reasons why good Muslims cannot be good Americans. So I'm just going to go through those real quick. Number one, theologically, no, because his allegiance is to Allah, the moon god of Arabia. Number two, religiously, no, because no other religion is accepted by his Allah except Islam. Three, scripturally, no, because his allegiance is to the five pillars of Islam and the Quran. Geographically, no, because his allegiance is to Mecca, to which he turns in prayer five times a day. Number five, socially, no, because his allegiance is to Islam. His allegiance to Islam forbids him to make friends with Christians or Jews. Six, politically, no, because he must submit to the mullahs, who are spiritual leaders, who teach annihilation of Israel and destruction of America, the great Satan. Seven, domestically, no, because he is instructed to marry four women and beat and scourge his wife when she disobeys him. Intellectually, no, because he cannot accept the American Constitution since it's based on biblical principles and he believes the Bible to be corrupt. Number nine, philosophically, no, because Islam, Muhammad, and the Quran does not allow freedom of religion and expression. Democracy and Islam cannot coexist. Every Muslim government is either dictatorial or autocratic. 10, spiritually, no, because when we declare one nation under God, the Christian's God is loving and kind, while Allah is never referred to as Heavenly Father, nor is he ever called love in the Quran's 99 excellent names. And he concludes by saying, therefore, after much study and deliberation, perhaps we should be very suspicious of all Muslims in this country. They obviously cannot be both good Muslims and good Americans. Call it what you wish, it's still the truth. You had better believe it. The more who understand this, the better it will be for our country and our future. The religious war is bigger than we know or understand. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, we are living in a country that is fundamentally
Christian.
It's diametrically opposed to the Islam state. And when you try to incorporate or assimilate those two ideals, like when our foundation is based on Christian beliefs and Christian ideals, and you come and try and establish within the landscape of the United States with a new religion, a new philosophy, and do all that without assimilation, then that is catastrophic. It is dangerous. Now, there are Muslims out there who are able to work within society. They do different things. They believe their beliefs as they should within the United States. That's part of our freedom of religion. Absolutely. But even that has parameters, because you can't just say, oh, well, my religion trumps out the constitutional, structure or organizational code, so to speak, that rules this land. If you say that your religion is the higher power and you believe that and you defy the Constitution, then we have major conflicts. That's where those conflicts arise. And those two ideals are not compatible, at least not now. If there is some magic politician or religious leader or something that is able to effectively merge and create some sort of truce between Christians and or the Christian ideal and the Islamic State, fine, whatever, do the thing. But as of now, that is not compatible. The United States is not compatible with an Islamic state or with Islamic law. And we've seen in other nations who have invited this kind of culture as a, you know, cultural enrichment or whatever, we've seen them severely riddled with crime, rape, you know, all kinds of obstructions to justice and different things of that nature. And I don't need to regale everybody on the specifics on that, but I mean, look at France, look at Germany, look at Italy, look at Spain, look at some of these major metropolitan regions within those areas, and you will see that the Muslim influence and the Islamic influence within those areas is so strong that it is basically become the law within those regions. And the people who live there, the white, Caucasian, Catholic, Christian, whatever, they are now the minority. And as a result, they have zero say. They have no recourse in trying to take back what they once knew as the norm. So, you know, you're starting to see what is possible in these other areas. And if you think that won't happen in the United States, you're off in the night. You got to wake up and realize that this is very possible. And if you don't keep this in check, then it can be a catastrophic issue. It can be like a civil war style conflict that could emerge, but it's more of a religious war without boundaries.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, because religious wars don't have boundaries. Because if you think about it, Muslims believe Allah to be infinite, right? Without bounds. And Christians believe God to be the same way, you know, the spirit of Jesus to be infinite without bounds. And so when you put those two kind of forces together, it's like what happens when an unstoppable force meets an immovable object.
Yeah, it's dangerous. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, let's just, because we have, I want to play one audio clip here, and this is actually a video. So there's video and blueprints and everything, but I'm encouraging everybody to go to YouTube and just type in Epic City, E-P-I-C, Epic City, and find this ad and watch it for yourself. But I'm going to play the audio right here, and you can kind of hear the audio. I know there's going to be some times you just hear music. What in those times when it's just music, there's like an overview kind of this land that they're trying to portray as some peaceful, coexisting, you know, plot of land where Muslims are just living in peace. That kind of thing, which has never happened in the history of Islam, unless they're just living amongst themselves. They're all agreeing the same thing, because there are different branches of Islam, right? There are. They kill each other. But when you get all Islams together in the same accord and they're believing, that's the only time there's peace. When men are ruling and they all believe the same thing. That's the only time there's peace. But I'm going to go ahead and play this, and then from there, after that, let's take a break, and we'll come back. We'll talk about our next topic.
402 acres of beautiful scenery. Welcome to the future of living. Welcome to Epic City. Nestled in the heart of Josephine, Texas, it is about 20 miles and 20 minutes from Epic.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
Welcome to Epic 2.0. Epic City is more than just a neighborhood. It's a way of life. A meticulously designed community that brings Islam to the forefront. A community that blends with nature, crafted to elevate your living experience. With single-family homes, multi-family townhomes and apartments, senior living, and in the heart a mosque and a school.
At the heart of mosque. All right, so we know, of course, what direction that will be facing towards Mecca. And we know what would be happening, you know, every however often it is that those horns, the song plays, and they all have to drop what they're doing to get on their face and face east, you know. And it's just a matter of time before we go from being a, it goes from being a community, right, to a town, to a city, to a county. Where does it stop? Because eventually they'll reach the size of having an army.
Well, here's the thing: is like I mentioned earlier, they're not compatible. Now you have, like where I live, we've got mosques, we've got Korean churches, we've got, you know, Mormon churches, what do you call that?
Mennonites.
We have Mennonites, Protestant churches, you know, different variations of living faith across the board. Christian, we have, all kinds of different varieties because of where I live.
Yeah.
And it is possible to live in the same community and have your own religious beliefs, but it can become dangerous when that becomes the sole purpose. Because as soon as you have a school, you have churches, and you have a community that build essentially its own city council, its own governance, at that point, you don't have assimilation. You don't have variety. You don't have that level of community that exists that becomes a melting pot. It is essentially Chinatown, but it's an Islamic Chinatown. Or, you know, you'd have Irish communities that would get together, the Irish Catholics in New Jersey, New York, Boston, that kind of thing. Sure, that exists. I mean, that's fine. But the thing is they still believed in the American way. The reason they were here is because they believed in the American way. I don't see that as the case here. I see that as basically you're Islam, and you want to live in the United States and be part of the Islamic faith, this is a place where you come to live that life, but not have to experience everything else that goes with the United States, the laws, the customs, the integration, the assimilation into American culture. There is no melting pot there. And that can be scary. One thing that I did want to mention too is, like, you mentioned the civil rights earlier. You noticed a lot in the civil rights, you'd have famous people who were switching and converting to Islam or Muslim. I mean, Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, and Malcolm X, you know, different people within the black civil rights movement that were switching to, what's his name? The basketball player, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, right?
Right.
A lot of these people were converting to Islam, and they were believing the faith, but they were also still working towards civil rights and doing positive things and trying to encourage equal treatment. They weren't trying to basically substitute Islam for the American faith. Even though they're not compatible, they still had the ability to live their life and live, you know, believe what they wanted to believe within the United States. But I don't see that happening with this Epic City. I see that as an advertisement to gain people, to gain power within a small community and grow outward, like you say.
Right. And their job, the job of Islam and the job of Christianity is the same thing. When it boils down to is proselytizing new converts.
Yeah, spread the word.
Yes, but the difference is in the melting pot situation that you refer to, because America has been referred to as the great melting pot. We have how many thousands of cultures here that melt and live together in perfect harmony, right? But that harmony is disrupted. Even Christians, all the brands you listed, and all the different denominations, they don't kill each other because, you know, there's been wars in the past, you know, like Catholics in the Dark Ages. I mean, we've come a long way since, but that's an extreme example. The Dark Ages, Catholics were killing people who didn't believe the way that they believed. And they were no better back then than the Islams were, the Muslims were, for killing people that didn't believe the way that, again, we're now living in the age of information. We've grown as a people, as a race, as the human race, way beyond that. Like, we don't kill each other. We shouldn't anyway, unless you're a caveman. These people are cavemen. They still brutalize their wives. They still decapitate the heads of people who don't believe it the way that they do. That's caveman type animalistic behavior. And there's no place like that in America. If you want to believe that way, keep it in your country. Don't come to this country and do that. I know for one, this is something worth fighting for. I would lay down my life, not even thinking twice about it, to protect what we have here against such an invasion.
Oh, absolutely.
But something you mentioned Malcolm X, and this, I don't want to go too far off topic because I do want to take a break. But I just want to quickly read this. It's like a paragraph long, but it's a long paragraph. And you probably heard this. Malcolm X, even he got it, being a Muslim, on the white liberal. Have you ever heard his quote on the white liberal?
Oh, yeah. This absolutely.
It's an oldie, but goodie, right? One.
Let it rip.
All right. The white liberal is the worst enemy to America and the worst enemy to the black man. Let me first explain what I mean by this white liberal. In America, there's no such thing as Democrats and Republicans anymore. That's antiquated. In America, you have liberals and conservatives. This is what the American political structure boils down to amongst whites. The only people who are still living in the past and thinks in terms of I'm a Democrat or I'm a Republican is the American Negro. He's the one who runs around bragging about party affiliation, and he's the one who sticks to the Democrat or sticks to the Republican. But the white people in America are divided into two groups, liberals and Republicans, or rather liberals and conservatives. And when you find white people vote in the political picture, they're not divided in terms of Democrats and Republicans. They're divided consistently as conservatives and as liberal. The Democrats who are conservative vote with Republicans who are conservative. Democrats who are liberal vote with Republicans who are liberal. You find this in Washington, D.C. Now, the white liberals aren't white people who are for independence, who are liberal, who are moral, who are ethical in their thinking. They are just a faction of white people who are jockeying for power, the same as the white conservatives are a faction of white people who are jockeying for power. Now, they're fighting each other for booty, for power, for prestige. And the one who is the football in the game is the Negro. 20 million black people in this country are political footballs, a political pawn, an economic football, an economic pawn, a social football, a social pawn. So
it kind of goes to show you that, hey, look, you can still have a religious viewpoint and live within the structure that exists within the United States and be able to be eloquent, be able to contribute to society, be able to move an agenda forward. Civil rights is a great example. I have a really hard time with any particular agenda that would be a positive movement from an Islamic state in the United States. And I think that what you're seeing with this epic city is it's a turning point, potentially, where you will see an Islamic state start to develop within the United States. And then how long after that are we going to see a Palestinian state within the United States? And, you know, all these different factions, and we have enough issues to deal with already as it is. We don't need to be, you know, worrying with this, but I think it's interesting that this is coming out at the same time as we have, you know, this weird guy who's claiming to be the Pope now.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you've heard about that.
Yeah, I have.
I mean, it's kind of in the same vein where we're like, wait a second. You know, we got a next level religious war percolating right now, and people need to be really on their toes with who they communicate with, what they communicate in those conversations, and where you're doing it. The thing is, it's like, this is totally acceptable now, which is weird to me, because when it comes to Christianity and Christian beliefs, religious beliefs like that, you know, we're 2 weeks ago was the anniversary of Ruby Ridge, and people don't realize that our government basically assassinated Christians. And I mean, say what you want about the Branch Davidians, whatever. So you still have a religious group of people who established their own school, established their own community, their own security forces, their own churches, all this within a very small compound. And the feds came down on them hard. I don't see that happening because people are going to be afraid to set off an Islamic bomb in the United States. I don't see that same thing happening if there's a Palestinian, you know, village that percolates, or a Buddhist village that comes up.
No,
you're not going to see it with the other religions, but all of a sudden it's okay when the feds decide to roll in with tanks and flamethrowers on a bunch of women and children. So, I mean, that's a hot spot for me. Ruby Ridge was, it really is. And I think people need to look that up. If you don't know what Ruby Ridge is, you need to do some homework tonight. Here,
Ruby Ridge was a site of siege of a cabin occupied by the Weaver family in Boundary County, Idaho, in August 1992. On August 21st, deputies of the United States Marshal Service came to arrest Randy Weaver under a bench warrant for the failure to appear on federal firearms charges after he was given the wrong court date. During a surveillance operation, Officer Art Roderick shot Weaver's dog when it ran at them and then pointed his rifle at Weaver's son, Samuel, who was armed. Samuel fired back at the marshals and was shot and killed by the team. In the ensuing exchange of fire, the Weaver's friend, Kevin Harris, shot and killed Deputy Marshal William Francis Deegan, Jr. Weaver. Harris and members of Weaver's immediate family refused to surrender. The hostage rescue team of the Federal Bureau of Investigations became involved, and the siege was mounted in the standoff. FBI sniper Lon Horucci shot Weaver, then shot Harris, but the second shot also hit and killed Weaver's wife, Vicky.
Yeah. So a week later was the siege at Waco, Texas. So...
This is under Clinton's administration, Bill Clinton
administration. This was during the 90s. And I'm getting my sieges mixed up. So Ruby Ridge was kind of a powder keg, because this guy wanted to be able to teach his own kids on his own land and get out of the school system, not be under federal taxes or anything, just do his own thing. Okay. That's on a family scale. You bump that up to a community scale, and then you have Waco. At Waco, there was like 77 people that died, something like that. Women, children, elderly men, doesn't matter. I mean, across the board. And that one, that's like watching something from Afghanistan or Iraq or during Desert Storm happen in Texas because of a bunch of Christians that wanted, as the Branch Davidians that were trying to basically establish their own Christian community and shut off the rest of the country. So that one was a little bit more of it was kind of like an escalated version of the Ruby Ridge. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is that in the 90s, they used this as a tool to be able to say, oh, right wing extremists are bad people and we want gun control and all this kind of stuff. Well, what are they going to do if they start seeing people getting their heads chopped off in Epic City? Are they going to roll in with tanks? I highly doubt that.
Well,
that's kind of the viewpoint that I'm kind of seeing, is that it ain't going to happen
because of the woke movement.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll never happen. But even more modern times, Lavoie Finicum, right? Remember the shootout that happened there? He was one of the American militants who, and this is I'm reading right now from Wikipedia, who staged an armed occupation of the Maurer National Wildlife Refuge, which I love the way that some of this stuff is worded, because if you go and look up the history of it, like the true history of it, he wasn't sieging anything. He had firearms on him, and the feds didn't like this, that he had firearms on federal land. It was the issue, if I remember right.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. After it began, the occupying force organized itself as the Citizens for Constitutional Freedom. Wikipedia. Wikipedia is you can add to Wikipedia. You can put something on there. You know, people fact check it, and if it's kosher, it stays. If it's proven untrue, you know, it's edited out and changed. That's what it is. So Wikipedia is to me more along the lines of Snopes. You know, you can't really rely on it because it's certainly leaning a certain way. But yeah, we got the Lavoie Finicum thing, and what was the Bundy Ranch? Remember the Bundy Ranch shoot off?
Oh, that's right.
Standoff.
Yeah. That was in Eastern Oregon.
Yeah. So I mean, and that was
same thing. They wanted to graze their cattle on.
Yes, that was
public land.
That was a Harry Reid situation. Thank God he retired. That man was filthy dirty. One of the most filthy senators, I believe, that had ever. I'm loosely saying this, served in a position of Congress. He was selling land, openly selling federal land. And if you look up California and Arizona, it's almost completely red. And he was from Arizona. But a lot of that kind of stuff happened because of him and people like him. But so the big thing was sand turtles or sea, not sea turtle, but sand turtles. I guess these desert turtles were coming and they were trying to take this land that had been family land for years. Say, no, this is now federal land because there is some kind of a species of turtle on it that was going extinct. Well, I'm sorry, but the Constitution does not give authorization for the government to seize land or take land because of an animal is seen as going extinct. It's very specific that land can only be purchased, federal land can only be purchased for use for federal munitions, federal buildings, and things like that. You can't seize somebody's property and say, yeah, I have rights to this because of a turtle.
And I mean, they'll find reasons to take what they want. I mean, they did it to Native Americans for ages. Oh, there's black oil in this land? Okay, well,
yeah.
I guess you're moving you somewhere else.
Backtracking here one moment to Malcolm X, because this is really what I was looking for earlier. This is an audio bite of Malcolm X on the White Liberal. Listen to this.
Many whites who are trying to solve the problem, but you never see them going under the label of liberals. That white person that you see calling himself a liberal is the most dangerous thing in the entire Western Hemisphere. He's the most deceitful. He's like a fox. And a fox is always more dangerous in the forest than the wolf. You can see the wolf coming. You know what he's up to. But the fox will fool you. He comes at you with his mouth shaped in such a way that even though you see his teeth, you think he's smiling and taking for a friend.
There are many whites who act friendly toward Negroes. A fox acts friendly toward the lamb. And usually the fox is the one who ends up with the lamb chop on his plate. The wolf doesn't act friendly. And therefore the wolf has more difficulty in getting the lamb chop.
I love these kind of analogies. Plate.
I'd like to point out, though, that
I say that because it is usually if you study the structure of the Negro community, economically, politically, civically, psychologically, and otherwise, it's controlled by the white liberal, who usually poses as the friend of the Negro.
On the other hand, I think one could point to a large number of whites who have struggled for civil rights, for equality, and have got little or nothing out of it. Other than quite a few bruises.
Give me an example.
Well, the large number of white students who have gone into the South, for example, working for SNCC and other organizations.
Not working for SNCC or other organizations, but working for the white political machines who benefit by the voting efforts of Negroes.
Okay. Today, you could point to a large number of Negro leaders who have consistently betrayed Negroes in a whole host of areas.
They aren't really Negro leaders. These are puppets that have been put in front of the Negro community by white liberals. These are parrots that have been put in front of the Negro community by white liberals. You can't name me a Negro leader who has been betrayed Negroes, who has not been endorsed, sanctioned, subsidized, and supported by the white liberals.
Well, so not much has changed since then. They stopped using the word Negro, but you see that guy on there was clearly a liberal, trying to defend liberalism and how Democrats help black people, right? So that was the angle he was taking. Malcolm X was like, no, you're not doing this for black people. You're doing this for the machine so you can make Democrats look good so that down the road, you know, when it's time to vote, these votes will be cast for your party.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the same thing that we saw last year, 4 years ago. I mean, it's really surprising to me. And I have a hard time with that when I go back east because I see so much Democratic support among black people. And it's like, I just don't get it because I can see through that. I can see what's happening when you got a white dude or a black puppet who is, or white chick, I guess, it doesn't matter. Who's basically pulling the strings from a Democratic side saying, oh, we'll give you these handouts. We'll do these things. Just make sure you give us our vote instead of fight for your freedom.
Right.
You know, be yourself. And we want you to be strong as a community, not reliant upon the government. And there, that diametrically opposed viewpoint is obscured by the left so well that they are able to basically take control of black communities and say that this is the way that it needs to be. These are things you need to believe. And all you got to do is turn on, you know, and I see it when I'm looking at the news media, but when I'm traveling anyway, and I look around and I see people that are talking about it and it's like, you got to be kidding me. You actually believe this stuff. Okay.
Well, they believe it because they're indoctrinated to believe you're the victim. When you grow exactly. up thinking you're a victim, you're a victim, you're a victim. You're not going to listen to anything else except you're a victim.
No.
And so when you turn on the TV, what do we got? We got a media dominated by the left. You're a victim. You're a victim. They're constantly showing all this negative stuff. Of course, you know, it's all portraying the same thing. You're a victim. And so, but people, here's the good news is people are starting to feel in their pocketbooks. Okay.
Yeah.
And they're starting to not, they're starting to acknowledge the fact that, hey, we had a Republican here, and I had a lot more money in my pocket when he was president. They're saying he's a racist, but how is that possible when I'm doing better now than I was under Obama, who was black?
Right.
And they're starting to add things up. They're starting to do their own homework, and I'm seeing more and more of it. You know, blacks coming out in support of Trump. And their eyes are being open, not just in support of Trump, but in they're being open to the fact that they're being that slavery hasn't ended. It's just changed its right. form.
Exactly.
It's gone just, from yeah. physical chains to mental chain.
Or, you know, even financial chains where they're basically leashed to handouts because they are in environments or situations to where they physically cannot they can't change that. You know, they're like, well, if I go get a job or I do this thing, then I lose my benefits that have been handed to me by a Democrat. You know, something like that. And I'm not saying that is true with all black communities. What I'm saying is it's an easy opportunity for people of any race to vote for a political party if they wind up giving you a handout as a result. I mean, we saw it with COVID when people were handing out hamburgers for vaccines.
Yeah.
Oh, I got, people yeah. are dumb enough to take that.
I think somewhere I got a video saved of, I believe it was Bloomberg, Mayor Bloomberg eating, I want to say it was him. I believe it was him eating French fries and a burger.
Yeah.
This is good. Everyone in his mouth is full of greasy freaking fake meat and fries. And he's like, and all I had to do is get a shot for this.
Yeah.
You know, nothing to me. And this is just my open-mindedness. There's nothing that screams louder, red flag louder than somebody trying to convince me to take a shot that hasn't been tested by saying, I'll give you something free if you take this.
Yeah.
That screams red flag to me.
Exactly. And it should scream red flag to any American, regardless of your race, that, hey, look, if I'm getting something for free, then you are the product. You don't realize that just like with Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, if you give up your email or if you sign up for some free you know, program or site or Snapchat or whatever, you are the product. And people are starting to realize that, hopefully, that on the political side of things, if you get something for free, guess what? Your vote is the product. And they expect that of you. And the thing is you need to realize what that actually means 5-10 years from now, or yes, even a generation from now.
Yes, nothing is free. At some point, there comes a time that you have to pay the piper.
Yeah. And I mean, back to this Epic City thing, same deal. I mean, if you think that this is going to roll over smooth and it's just going to be a great opportunity to hide out and, you know, be a sect within Texas, there's going to be a rude awakening, and it might not be a peaceful one. Nope. And I think if that is a powder keg, it's going to blow up sooner rather than later.
Yes. One quick break here, Ryan, and then I got one more piece of audio. Actually, you said something about a hearing earlier. I got one more piece of audio I want to play out of Josephine, Texas. It's a lady at a hearing, and she's confronting the board about this Epic City. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back. The Rising Republic, along with other shows on the Prepper Broadcasting Network, is brought to you by our great sponsors, like PackFresh USA. PackFresh USA believes it's essential for buyers to feel completely confident in the security of their food storage, which is why every purchase is backed by an unconditional guarantee. Their oxygen absorbers are designed to absorb 180 to 300% of their rated capacity, providing a safety buffer to ensure optimal freshness. PackFresh USA's convenient 10 packs minimize exposure, reduce waste, and eliminate the need for resealing. To support and educate customers, especially those new to long-term food storage, the company provides its signature 5-star service along with a comprehensive long-term food storage guide. Oxygen indicators are included in every package to verify freshness at a glance. Additionally, PackFresh USA is proud to be certified organic by the Idaho State Department of Agriculture. For personalized support, customers can contact 5-star service at PackFreshUSA.com. Again, that's the number 5-star service at PackFreshUSA.com. Welcome back to the Rising Republic. Okay, here's that piece of audio that I have out of Josephine, Texas. And this is a lady, again, at a board hearing, because she's there confronting her board. So if you go to any board, there's most boards have this, at least this time for new business, where they open up the floor for the citizens to address any new concerns. This is when this lady steps up. Check this out.
Good afternoon, Judge Hill, commissioners, and all in attendance. I know what I'm going to say here today in front of all may sound harsh, but I speak the truth. There are things no one wants to hear, but I speak the truth. Emotions aside, here is the truth. So my mother came here from Guatemala and fought hard to become a U.S. citizen. She learned English immediately. She taught us kids how blessed we were to live in America, and because this country has given us so much, we need to respect it. She surrounded herself with other Americans. She got a job, went to an English-speaking church. We went to normal American activities and celebrated American holidays. We didn't come here and create a Latin Catholic compound where we went to Guatemalan Catholic medical clinics, schools, etc. People die every day to come to this country to become American citizens, to embrace the culture, to live it. My question to Epic is, why would you come here if you're not going to assimilate? You are literally creating a compound in the middle of our state. This isn't a little neighborhood with a mosque nearby. No, it's 400 acres of nothing but your ideology. It's an entire system, your school, your mosque, your fitness center, your medical center, your senior living center, your parks, your sports with tennis, cricket, volleyball, and soccer, all with the theme, Islam. This is not okay with the American people. I am not okay with all of this. A medical center is just a place with doctors to help you with your medical needs, right? So why on earth do you need an Islamic theme in that medical center? It's not about health. It's about your Islamic ideology as the main rule. That's what your compound is all about. Again, this is not okay to me. I don't care what religion comes into this country as long as it does not try to take over, as long as it doesn't harm others, as long as it doesn't break our laws. You can say we are racist, but if we are racist, why is no one saying anything about you living here in general? You have thousands of, and thousands of people here allowed, so don't try to say anything. Anyone's being racist. No one arrests you for solely existing. This was posted by Epic Masjid, titled "Epic City Dream Begins with Landmark Land Acquisition." So Epic stated, and I want everyone to truly think about what I'm about to state right now. And I quote, "Epic is more than just a neighborhood. It's a way of life, a meticulous design community that brings Islam to the forefront."
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's it. Her time has expired. She only got 3 minutes there. But what's your thoughts on that? She made some valid points.
Yeah. I mean, just like what we've been saying. I mean, here you have the child of an immigrant, and the mentality of that immigrant was, we want to assimilate. We want to enjoy the culture. We want to be here. We want to also, because I mean, if you're a Guatemalan American, you're still an American, and you're still, you have a foot in both states, so to speak. But your allegiance is to the United States. I don't believe the allegiance in Epic City is going to be to the United States. No. It's going to be to Islam.
To Mecca. Yes, I agree 100%. You mentioned immigrants here. Have you been paying attention to what's been going on with did you see that finally they're starting to make some, this is the big thing. This is big news. There's a Wisconsin judge that was placed under arrest by the FBI here in the last week.
I saw that. Yep. And they dragged her out. I saw the photo on social media. You know, we got judges that are withholding it from me. I think there was one in Arizona too, that recently got either busted or something, but these judges are holding MS-13 members in their own homes, obstructing justice, basically, you know, and you know, it's kind of hard to deny that when you got your whole body tatted up with MS-13 paraphernalia. Gang member or not, you're a member for life, whatever that means. So if that means all expenses paid trip to an El Salvador prison, guess what? That's what you get. That's what you signed up for. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. And you know, I'm glad to see it. I'm glad to see that these judges are actually getting, you know, they're basically getting put to the other side of the podium.
So I wanted, because this guy's name is, and there's been big news about it. Kilmar Albrego Garcia. The big news here. Okay. So this is the real story as it's being released by Homeland Security. Okay. So this is DHS.gov. Here's the fast facts as they release them. When Garcia was arrested, he was found with rolls of cash and drugs. Okay. So keep that in mind. That's an offense. Okay. That's a federal offense, rolls of cash and drugs. Number two, he was arrested with two other members of MS-13. What's that tell you? Gang activity.
That's a conspiracy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number three, when arrested, he was wearing a sweatshirt with rolls of money covering the ears, mouth, and eyes of presidents on various currency denominations. So this is, as they're going to say, this is known as MS-13 gang symbol of see no evil, hear no evil, say no evil. Number four, two judges found that he was a member of MS-13. So this went through the judicial process.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
They just didn't round this guy up off the streets. Hey, MS-13, he's going back to El Salvador. He went through the judicial process, which, okay, if they knew that he was here illegally, that they felt that needed to be proven, right? So they ran him through the court system twice and found out that he was, in fact, because remember, Trump changed the status of MS-13 to make it a terrorist organization, which it should have been made a long time ago.
A long time ago, yeah.
Okay, so two judges found that he was in fact a member of the MS-13, but you're not going to see this coverage on any of the social media, the lamestream media. It's not going to be anywhere. They're going to be talking about that. So that finding has not been disturbed. Number five, intelligence reports found that he was involved in human trafficking. Okay, so throw that out there because that's something else they do. He's an illegal alien from El Salvador. This much has been proven. Okay, so now we now have the facts that he's an MS-13 gang member, okay, and also that he's committed federal crimes, okay, and also that he is an illegal alien from El Salvador. Let me see here. He claimed fear of being returned to El Salvador because he would be prosecuted by MS-13's rival gang, Barrio 18, okay. Number eight, Jennifer Vasquez, Garcia's wife, petitioned for an order of protection against him. She claimed he punched her, scratched her, and ripped off her shirt and bruised her. So he's a woman beater besides. Okay, so we have all these facts here lined up against him, that he's an MS-13 member, that he's here illegally, that he's, you know, that he's an illegal alien. They rounded him up and they shipped him back to El Salvador. And we have judges are that are saying, and just not just judges, but everybody on the left is saying, you can't do this. You can't do this. He deserves, you know, all this. They're demanding. You got people literally on the left traveling to see him in El Salvador. And how many of these people, Ryan, let me ask you, because me and you were both there in North Carolina, how many of these congresspersons and media giants went to North Carolina to interview the people there that was devastated by that hurricane?
Not enough, obviously.
No.
I mean, maybe one or two. And if even at that, it was probably a kangaroo court kind of a show and tell where they made it look like they were there, but probably didn't actually, you know, go to any of the sites.
Well, they never got their until Trump came in office. They never really got any support.
No aid, no nothing.
Yeah. No. Let me see here. So back to this judge that was arrested. I got pulled up Epic Times here. FBI arrests Wisconsin judge for allegedly obstructing ICE, Trump administration says. So here's what happened. And you got to do your own studies to find this, because you're not going to find it on just one source. But what happened was, ICE found out that this man was here, right? He was being tried for whatever. He was in this courtroom. And at the end of the hearing, it wasn't an actual trial, but at the end of this hearing, the judge found out from whispers in the court that ICE was outside waiting for him to leave so they could arrest him and deport him, whoever this guy is.
Yeah.
Let me see here. Probably if I go through some things here, I can find out who it was. Eduardo Flores Ruiz, an illegal alien. All right, so what she did was she whisked him up, took him through her office, out through a secret passage and a secret exit where he could flee and evade capture and arrest. That's a federal felony. That's a federal crime. Oh, hell yeah.
That's aiding and abetting, and you do that as a judge, you're going right up the creek.
That's why she was arrested. So when you hear the left and you hear the lamestream media talking about this judge that was arrested for opposing Trump and standing up to Trump and his deportation, his illegal deportation, that's what happened. She's aiding and abetting an illegal alien and helping him to evade capture.
Yeah, I mean, that's clear as day. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about that. I mean, we would have gotten worse punishment if we were doing something.
Definitely.
I mean, if we were holding up MS-13 members in the bunkhouse out back or whatever, you know, somebody shows up,
guess we wouldn't
what?
See the light
Not
of
only
day.
Do they get busted, so would we. Yep.
Now, this judge will probably, you know, because she's a judge, evade the kind of the treatment, because we hear everybody say it. Pam Bondi said in this case, you know, she said, no one's above the law. They were saying the same thing about Trump, the left was, when they were trying him in the kangaroo courts. No one's above the law, you know, and all those crazy shenanigans, right? But apparently there is a different level of the law applied to status in this country. We saw it with Hillary Clinton, you know, yeah. And her bleach bidding of the email scandal and all that stuff that, you know, so many times she has evaded arrest because of her status as a politician. This judge probably going to see the same thing. She probably won't see any jail time or not too much anyway. That being said, I want to turn, and before we close today, I want to turn our attention to a lighter note. There was a, and let me pull it up here on my, I got it saved to my favorites. I love this. Who did this? The NRSC, and that stands for the National Republican Senatorial Committee. It's the only national organization solely devoted to strengthening the Republican Senate majority and electing Republicans to the United States Senate. They made this ad. This is comical, and I'll kind of want to end on this lightheartedness because it's funny. This is a funny ad, unless you're a Democrat and your heart is bleeding for these illegals that are being deported back to their country. Listen to this.
Welcome to El Salvador, home to breathtaking sunsets, world-class surf breaks, and gangbanger Kilmer Abrego Garcia. El Salvador is the destination for Democrats seeking the thrill of bringing violent criminal illegal aliens back to America. Come witness Trump Derangement Syndrome in its purest form. From Chris Van Hollen to Cory Booker, you may even see John Ossoff. So what are you waiting for, Senate Democrats? Join your colleagues and step into the rhythm of rescue today.
Classic.
Love it. That's awesome.
It was awesome. I want to thank everybody for listening to The Rise of the Republic. I'm L. Douglas Hogan.
And I'm Ryan Buford. Thanks for joining us, everyone.